America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Everybody, we're back. It is Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, on the heels of an amazing light heavyweight fight between Artur Beterbiev and Dmitry Bivol. Beterbiev gets the win, highly controversial. Don't use that R word. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. Got some sleep after the fight. I love these early shows, by the way. It's not like brutally late. I'm not like spending the next morning licking my wounds, so I'm feeling good today. Got my workout in already.
Damn,
good things.
I'm gonna be working out after this. I was in Puerto Rico for Most Valuable Prospects. Awesome event. Got to hang out with Shane Mosley. You know, I nice. Asked him about the Tank thing. He said he would kill Tank, which was hilarious.
That's hilarious.
He was like,
how did he say it?
I was like, hey, bro, I'm Dan, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I started, someone called into our show and started this unbelievable argument between you and Tank at 135. I would have killed him. He cut me off. He's like, I would have killed him.
That's awesome.
He had prepared. Like, he had been thinking about this for a while. He's like, I'm too strong. I'm too big. I got too good of a – he went through a whole list. And I was like, damn, bro, you were ready for that.
Did you tell him to listen to our show when we talked about that?
Yes, he was very appreciative that we're still mentioning his name and all that. So I rushed back from PR. I was watching the first couple of rounds of the fight on my phone, ESPN Plus. Everyone out there that had
the main?
To deal with
the you were watching the main on the phone.
I watched the first two rounds.
Dude,
on my phone.
You were really cutting it close. Wow.
Well, they said 6, and I landed at like 4:30, and I was like, okay. The one time I really want a really long fill, like give me the Missy Elliott fucking concert.
give away five cars.
Just get so I can get to my couch. And then it looked like they moved it up. They're like they're actually listening to fans. And like it was a quicker card. The pace was quicker. Then they had there was reports out there that they couldn't start the main event till 6 p.m. because it was on ESPN Plus. And I'm like, okay, that gives me time to get home. But that sucks for people out there just waiting because the last fight ended at 4:30. Anyway, I watched the first two rounds on my phone. I had to rush up to my apartment, settled in and watched an unbelievable fight. And that's will be the main focus of today's episode is breaking down this fight. Artur Beterbiev picks up the majority decision win, which, you know, the scorecards are all over the place. I think a majority of fans believe that Bivol won the fight. Beterbiev wins 114-114, one of the judges, 115-113. 116-112. We can all agree that the Polish judge, Paul Cardini, 116-112, it's just an abomination. It's Adelaide Bird bad. Everyone's going to dwell on that 116-112, but I thought, Chris, it was a really highly competitive fight. If it was a really technical fight, I thought it lived up to the hype. I thought it exceeded the hype in some ways, but unfortunately, we're all going to look to a bad scorecard. Unfortunately, we're going to look to a bad decision in some people's minds. I hope that we can also just say that this was an unbelievable, undisputed fight.
Yeah, I'm gonna second your thoughts in a lot of ways. It was a very good fight, very tactical, which is we've been saying that we knew it was going to be this kind of fight. I didn't expect a barn burner. I don't think you did either, Dan. These guys are so respectful of each other and such high level, and this is why. When we did the head-to-head preview, I talked about their boxing IQ being on par. And we saw a tactical matchup of guys playing chess, not checkers. And it was a very good fight, especially for boxing heads. If you really, really, really pay attention and watch the nuances of this sport and what those guys are doing in there, this was a masterclass on positioning. Both of these guys were so good at positioning themselves, not only positioning themselves to be offensive, but also positioning themselves to disarm their opponents. neither one of these guys was able to really assert what they normally do to everybody else. And that's what made this fight that interesting. But yeah, unfortunately, when the most eyes are on our sport, we tend to fumble the ball. And this wasn't as bad as a lot of other decisions that we've seen in the past. I don't think it was a robbery. I don't using the R word. I hate using that word, especially for fights that are close. Was the fight close? Absolutely. Did I have Bivol winning? No question in my mind. I find it really hard to find a way that you get Beterbiev ahead in the fight. A draw, sure, I could see that. I had Beterbiev, I had Bivol up. Dude, 8-4, eight rounds to four, 116 to 112 for Beterbiev in this fight blows my mind. Blows my mind. And we always tend to do that. We always harp on that one bad call that's so far off. But listen, none of the judges got it right. We had a draw and then two guys going for Beterbiev, as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, it's going to take away from the tactical battle that it was. But man, I was on the edge of my seat. I enjoyed the hell out of that fight.
I mean, exactly, Chris. It wasn't going to be some rock'em sock'em robots. No. It was going, like, Bivol pushed himself in ways that he hadn't in the past. Mm-hmm. Beterbiev
did ground great. Really impressed early on.
Yes, and Beterbiev wasn't able to land at will like he did in years past. He did land some big shots in there. You know, this fight reminded me a lot of Triple G and Canelo, the first fight, because I thought it was one of the most evenly matched technical fights between two of the best in their division. And that's what I thought heading into it. I was like, oh, this reminds me of that fight. Not in terms of like style or anything, just in terms of like the hype, the buildup, and what this could be, like high level boxing. And then as it unfolded and as it played out, it really reminded me of Triple G and Golovkin because of the scorecard and the fact that even 5-6 years later, when we look at Triple G Canelo, the first fight, we don't look at an unbelievable middleweight fight. We look at Adelaide Bird scorecard. Yeah. You look at, oh, I thought, you know, Triple G won that fight.
Good point.
And that's just the sport of the, that's just the way the sport goes. I'm seeing a lot of people, I would say the majority of fans thought Bivol won. I didn't score the fight because I was literally running around and I was just trying to enjoy it. But I hate to use this, but if you ask me, like, if you watch the whole fight and you just put a gun to my head and you're like, who won the totality of the fight? I would say Bivol too. Yeah. I would say Bivol slightly. And I had money on Beterbiev. I won that ridiculous Beterbiev decision bet. I did a reaction video. You could see the shock on my face. Like you could see me. You could see my brain registering. Holy shit, Beterbiev won. Oh shit, I just won a couple $100. That's pretty cool.
Did I say that on this show? Like that's not out of the question. I might have said it on the live last night.
You said it on our show because a bunch of people tailed it. A bunch of people were listening to the show, the preview show, and they put some money on that Beterbiev decision. I thought the Beterbiev decision could have came if, you know, he scored like a knockdown and then Bivol got back into it by boxing and then went to the cards. I didn't think it would end up like how it did. But I would say like Bivol won the fight. I just from the naked eye, I thought he instilled what he wanted to do in there. A little more than Beterbiev. I thought Bivol was able to use some movement in there. He was able to stand his ground at times. It's those final three rounds that are going to be under the microscope, Chris, where all three judges had Bivol sweeping them. And they don't mean more. That's another thing, too. We're seeing a lot of stuff on social media, like robbery, and we're seeing championship rounds. Those all rounds are count the same, or at least they should. we never know what these judges are thinking. But those last three rounds, I think Bivol's going to look in the mirror and say, what the heck? Why did I? Well, you're shaking your head. So what do you think?
No, I'm thinking the same thing about, you know, Bivol. He completely gave up round 11, like just literally closed up shop for that fight. And Paulie and I were doing a live for ProBox TV and we were talking about it. And we were like, well, that was a tactical decision to take off round 11 to come out more aggressive in round 12. And he did, but still, it wasn't like he came out and was a different guy. You can't give away rounds like that late in a fight. And it seemed to me like his corner thought that they were ahead, like comfortably.
Oh, man, that's
which
scary.
I don't know how you can do that in this kind of fight. And not because it was close, because I honestly was looking at this fight and I thought that Bivol had the impression like, wow, this is a lot easier than I expected it to be. But I just knew how judges look at things and how they don't look at certain things. And we're still stuck in this stupid era of, I guess this is every era, where judges love the guy who just comes forward, whether he's landing or not. It's not even effective aggression anymore. It's like, oh, you're coming forward, you're winning the fight, which The way I look at it, Dan, I was thinking about this overnight at about 3 a.m. this morning when I woke up and sat there for an hour thinking about a fight that happened 6 hours earlier.
You're a nut. You're a freak.
Because I'm a nutcase. We'll get more into the tactics later. I'll get into it now. Anyway, I think both guys.
Speak your mind, Chris.
I think both men strategically did things that were very interesting. So it seemed to me that Beterbiev was trying to steal rounds, where he was very inactive for the first minute, sometimes 2 minutes of a round, and then really came on in the last 30, 40 seconds, trying to leave a lasting impression, almost as if he knew that he couldn't fight a full 3 minutes of a round, being 40 years old, and really was saving energy early in the fight. But then it turned out Bivol was kind of saving energy early in the fight too. He didn't have that pendulum in and out movement like we normally do. Stood his ground for the first 8-9 rounds. And then around 9, you start seeing him getting that bounce to step back. I was like, oh, this. I saw this. He was saving up energy, not trying to waste too much energy on his movement early on, and he's going to finish strong the last few rounds moving. Whereas I think the judges saw that as like, oh, he's running now. Now he's moving. He was standing his ground earlier. Now he's giving up ground. Now he's giving up position. When that's not the way the Bivol fights, and it wasn't like he was any less effective. He was still landing super clean right hands, you know, to the chin of Beterbiev throughout. So I think a lot of it came from perception, which, you know, subjective scoring, that's what happens.
Well, Chris, there is a criteria that judges are supposed to use: an effective aggression, clean, hard punches, ring generalship. I've been told those are the buzzwords that they use, but we don't know. We don't know what these judges.
That used
are
to be the graphic at. On HBO. Remember on HBO Sports, Harold, they would have that Harold would come on and he'd tell you the scoring criteria, and it would be defense, ring generalship, clean, effective punching, and effective aggression.
God, I miss Harold so much for so many different ways, so many different reasons, because I would love to hear his thoughts on some of these decisions we've had over the last couple of years, because he was the best at it. But like I'm saying, like there is a criteria out there, and I do agree, you know, calling a lot of fights now and being around the sport so much is that I really don't know what the judges are thinking. But what I do know is that we're getting this theme and we're starting to figure out that they really do favor the fighter that comes forward. And this fight pretty much came down to what you think should win a fight. Chris, you are a boxer. That's what you were. That's what you always will be. And I don't know if I'm going to assume that you kind of favor the boxer in some fights. I'm not going to say that for every judge out there, but there are some judges out there that favor the aggression of Beterbiev, that visual of him stalking and coming forward, even though a lot of his shots weren't landing on Bivol. Even though I will say that I believe Beterbiev landed the harder shots in the fight. So what I'm saying is the judges seem to favor come forward aggressive style. And in this type of fight, the judges are just like fans or just like us watching it. It's what you prefer. That's what this fight was. If you prefer boxing and you prefer movement and you prefer a guy that's in and out and picking his spots, then you're going to go with Bivol. If you're a guy that likes, all right, no nonsense, I want my fighters to come forward. I want them to walk through punches. I want them to land those hard shots. Then you're going for Beterbiev. And that's the type of fight it was. It was a close fight. I would have been fine with the draw. I would have been fine with 7-5 for either guy. It was just, what do you like? What do you prefer? That's the type of fight it was.
Well, I'm going to push back, Dan, respectfully. I don't prefer boxing as a style. I prefer picking boxers to win when you get a boxer-puncher matchup, just because I think it's more effective. I think boxers know how to beat punchers when you're a good boxer. I did. I was good at fighting punchers. My style matched up well. But when it comes to scoring, I don't think there should be any preference. That's the whole point of being a judge. You should be unbiased. I don't care if you like aggressive guys. I don't care if you like boxers. That's not your job. Your job is to be an unbiased observer who has a critical eye that knows specific things that they're looking for, that there is a standard that you're all supposed to be following, and that's how scoring is done. So when you have someone this guy generally favors fighters who go forward. What? What do you mean this guy? This guy's not a guy. He's not an individual. He's a judge. He is a standard, and that's an issue. And that's why, and this is something that a little inside listening and inside boxing, that's why you guys tune in here, stuff that you guys know is we actually go through the officials on big fights. It's a big part of the process of negotiating and figuring out who's going to work the fight. And when you're very, when you're smart and adept and you know the sport, those are things that you're working on. Size of the ring, gloves, you know, all these different kind of things that you never really hear about. Officials are part of that. And the reason for that is because everything you just said, Dan, because certain officials prefer certain guys. They have preferential treatment to styles, and that shouldn't be.
I think they do that in other sports too. In baseball, like you see like an umpire that like likes the high strike or likes the low one. Mm-hmm. So that you get like these judges get a reputation, or they figure out what they like here. And Bivol's team has already filed or going to start filing all sorts of, I wouldn't say lawsuits, but appeals for this Polish judge.
I like going.
It's not going to do anything.
It's not going to do anything. But like, it's. I don't think it was so egregious that you need to like try and pull the decision or whatever. Just get a rematch. I mean,
118. I think there will be a rematch. We'll get to that in a little bit. The 118-111 Adelaide Bird scorecard, that reeks of like corruption. The 116-112 kind of reeks of just incompetence. And that's what you're getting with these judges. It's either corruption or incompetence. It's one or the other.
That's the story as old as time, Dan.
Yeah, it's either you're getting paid or you're just a very bad judge. The 8-4 was nuts, and that's what everyone's going to dwell on. All three judges being in unison on rounds 10 through 12. I have the CompuBox stats here. Beterbiev outlanded Bivol 46-38 in those three rounds, which is a pretty slim margin. He just threw a lot more punches in those final three rounds. Beterbiev, that was the theme of the night. Beterbiev threw 205 punches in rounds 10 through 12. Bivol threw just 99.
I didn't get that impression at all, because I felt like a lot of the punches that Bivol was throwing, he was just like, he looked slow. He looked very slow.
Bivol or Beterbiev?
Beterbiev. So slower than usual. Just like really,
he did.
Just putting his arms out. They look very, like he just, like he looked like he was just range finding. I know you guys
threw
had
a lot of jabs,
but just putting out his arms, like not really trying to make contact. And when he did, yes, he made good solid contact. You know, even those punches, I call them flack. When you get flack through a punch, when a guy, you hit it and still hits you.
I used that on the air. I name dropped you. I didn't take it myself, because this fighter was just blasting the arms of this guy, and his head. Mm-hmm. I could see the hand and the arms
cracking,
hitting his face, bone. Hitting his yep. face. And I was like, my podcast partner Chris Audrey calls that flack, and Donaire loved it. And Bivol said it. They was asked about his power, and he said, "My thumb is so sore today because I had it pinned to my head."
Yep.
And Beterbiev was blasting my arms into my head. And I don't know. I mean, he said he was the most powerful guy I've ever faced. This is what Bivol said about Beterbiev.
You could see he looked I think both guys, I actually said this on the air. I was like, I think Beterbiev was a lot more shocked with the snap and the power of Bivol early. You saw him get hit with a couple shots, and it looked like they jarred him. And, he got right back into position because he's fantastic at that. But I think he was surprised even with the pop that Bivol has. He's respectful power, which we said.
I thought Bivol did a really good job of, like, he's obviously going to have, he has his style, right? And it's the in and out. And when are you going to take a risk? When are you going to sit down on your punches? I thought he did a really good job of mixing it up. He did a little bit of both. Like, he threw some nasty combinations that, if you're going to give credit to Beterbiev for coming forward and throwing combinations that maybe didn't land, then you better give credit to Bivol for doing the same thing in some of these combinations, in some of these sequences in these rounds. And there was a lot of those sequences. There was a lot of sequences where Bivol let his hands go and it looked flashy. I don't know how many of them landed. And there were more of those sequences than Bivol's. Yep. Beterbiev's.
Let's go first names, because someone pointed out that I think we mixed up their names in the last
they
episode.
They're too close in name.
Yeah.
And they're too close
in
style.
But then we have
too. They're too close in skill.
We got Benavidez, we got Bivol, we got Beterbiev, and it's just too many bees.
I talk for a living too.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't figure
it out. Let's go Arthur and Dimitri.
Okay. So Arthur, that's gonna throw me off even more. I'm just gonna try to figure it out. I thought Bivol had more moments than Beterbiev. I thought Beterbiev had more powerful moments than Bivol. I understand this is not how you score fights. I understand the CompuBox numbers aren't how you score fights because the judges don't see them, but they do tell a story. Bivol had a 5-punch edge in landed punches. Over the course of 12 rounds, that's nothing. You don't even look at that. Yeah. Beterbiev had a 6-punch edge in power landed. Once again, over 12 rounds, that's nothing. Beterbiev threw 260 more punches. And that's the biggest separator among the stats. Bivol landed 50% power, but he also threw 138 less power punches.
Yeah, but what were the accuracy levels? Because that's my point about what I was saying earlier. About
Bivol landed 50% power.
That's crazy. Like that's,
and he landed 30% of his total punches.
And what was the percentage landed against him? Which he's always very low.
Better be have only landed 20%, which is higher than most cases.
Higher than most people, but still extremely low for any kind of
30% power. Better be have landed. And he threw a lot, which is pretty good for throwing 300 plus power shots. I don't know, man. This fight, I just need to see it again. I mean, I think that's the definitive thing. It was such a close fight. Yeah, there were a couple of definitives.
I'm gonna go against what we were saying earlier. I think from a fan perspective, this was not a scintillating fight. It was a very tactical fight. You know, this
who
wasn't...
was watching this fight? Boxing fans. We talked about that in the last episode.
But
this was a
we don't
fight
want
for the...
just boxing fans to watch these kinds of fights because this is a big deal. And unfortunately,
was it though? I don't know if it was. I know what you're saying. I know you're such an ambassador for the sport, so you want it on its highest level to be shining. I did get a few texts. I always use this as a gauge. I did get a few texts from people that don't usually watch boxing were hitting me up for like, my friends. Like, who do you think someone better be of Bivol? And I was kind of shocked. I was like, how the hell do you know about this fight? Like, they're not like promoting it like that.
Well, hopefully they listen to our show. In which case we're making a big deal. We've been making a big deal about it. So
yeah, I would love if my friends listened to my show. But
that'd be nice. Some support would be nice.
This fight was for the boxing fan. This fight was for the hardcore, and I think the hardcore came away like, wow, that was take away the decision. Take away any of the politics, take away any of the nonsense that comes along with the sport a lot of times. You're just watching rounds 1 through 12. I thought it was amazing. I mean, yeah, and I think too. A lot of the fans thought that too. If you were a non-boxing fan and you watched it, you probably, it was like a Pacquiao Mayweather type of thing where it's like, well, where's the blood and where's the knockdowns and all that. So you're not going to, you know, you came away maybe feeling a little like, oh, that wasn't. Everything I thought it would
it's
be.
It's not Gotti Ward when we didn't expect Gotti Ward because high level fighters don't fight like Gotti Ward because they weren't that high level, especially at the time that they fought. Sure, Gotti was a 2-time world champion. Mickey was never a world champion, which is why the fight was so goddamn good because you don't really get high level guys fighting like that. The highest level like wars I've ever seen were Morales Barrera and Corrales Castillo. Yeah. Castillo Corrales. Those were the highest level barn burner type fights that worked out to be this. But this fight was not expected to be that.
This fight wasn't expected to be that, and I still thought it had pockets of like trading. Mm-hmm. I still think it was entertaining. It wasn't. I didn't walk away saying this is a dud. We didn't walk away. The main thing was the one scorecard. That's what people are going to walk away from, or the scorecard. No one was walking away from this fight saying that fight sucked. You know what I mean?
No. I mean you're on Twitter. I'm not. I mean, has the fan response been positive?
It's been 100. It's been very, very much that Bivol won. Like every big fighter, Shakur.
Yeah, we had that because we did a live chat last night, and it was 90%. Was everyone's like, what happened? That was a Bivol win.
How do you build a case for Beterbiev winning that fight? If you were a Beterbiev backer.
Like, I was talking to Tim Bradley. You. I was talking to Tim Bradley about that last night. He goes, hey, bro, who'd you have? And I was like,
well, Bradley was very pro Beterbiev.
I had Bivol, and I'm like, I think it was a close fight. Like, I'm not gonna call the, I'm not gonna say the R word, because I don't think it was. But I don't know. Like you said, what's the case for Beterbiev winning that fight? Especially
I'm asking you.
8 rounds. Me?
Like, I'm asking if you had to build the case for Beterbiev in there. Mm-hmm. That he won that fight, and you're his defense lawyer. What would you say?
I would say he stole rounds, and he backloaded his strategy was to backload the rounds, right? So early on, give up early rounds, not be super aggressive, use his positioning to find spots, don't take too much damage, make the rounds close enough so you can squeak them out at the end of rounds, and then really pour it on rounds 10, 11, 12 in the championship rounds.
Would you say that Beterbiev landed the harder punches throughout the fight?
I think he's the harder puncher for sure. And even the punches that were landing on the arms were harder. But I don't know, dude. I saw some pretty jarring shots from Bivol. Yeah. Beterbiev took him well. You know, he landed a 2-3, a right hand left hook, where he threw the right hand to land the left hook. That was one of the better shots that he landed. He landed some good body shots where he actually, I mean, they showed a replay of him scraping better be his rib cage, and you saw him like buckle over. So I don't know if he definitely landed the harder shots. I don't know if he landed the more effective shots in terms of doing damage, because I know we're going to talk about the eye, but the punches that I saw that looked to have effect on like the legs seem like Bivol landed the better shots in that case.
There's another thing I can't stand is when people go to the face, like look at his face. Like there's this fight pretty much had a lot of the things that I can't stand. It's like
guy who comes forward wins, guy who's got a cleaner face wins. Guy who's at the better knockout percentage wins, you know,
guy who comes forward automatically has to win. People throwing out robbery,
the scarier guy wins.
Or people throwing out robbery in a close fight. People pointing to the face as if that's a way to score a fight. Or people saying championship rounds are more important than the first three. Like, what makes the first three any right. less important than the final three? They're all judged the same. Like, they should be. Because, we keep looking at 10 through 12. Like, 10 through 12 should only matter because it's just part of the fight. Like, it's 10 through 12. Like, those rounds count on the scorecard just as much as the first three.
Yep. I mean, but Dan, what's the answer? Do we have to revamp scoring, or do we have to just open up the books? That's what I think. Right? We open up the books.
Open scoring?
Not open scoring. Open up the books on what is actually what we're looking for. We need a universal sit down where you all sit down and be like, guys, this is what we score. We don't mention the criteria anymore. Is the criteria still the same? I don't know. Who knows? Can we talk about the criteria?
We've gotten so far away from the criteria. We've gotten so far. Like, who would even organize?
People don't even know what ring generalship is anymore. I'm a big ring generalship.
What is ring generalship? Is ring generalship what Beterbiev was doing, or is ring generalship what Bivol was doing?
Well, for me, ring generalship is control. You're being the general, being the boss, being the general of the space. You're controlling the real estate, and if you're controlling the real estate, that means being able to position. It's a positioning battle. Being able to position your opponent where you want them, so you can be more effective, or positioning them in a position where they're disarmed and can't hurt you. So being in control of the space in the ring, but also the pace, the tempo. It's basically fighting a fight on your terms, which I don't think anyone talks of or thinks about that.
Well, that could be. See, here's the thing, bro. That could be looked at many different ways because,
of course,
because as I was watching that, it was Beterbiev that was coming forward the most of the fight. There's no denying that. I think Beterbiev was the one moving forward and kind of stalking.
Yeah, like a tank. I kept saying during the tell, he looks like a tank. He looks so
is that generalship?
Well, no, because he's not being effective. It's not putting himself into position to do what he does. You know, both of them were. You know, very much disarming each other because
so you can be a general, you can do ring generalship on your back foot.
Absolutely.
Judges are like, it blows their mind.
That's what I mean. That's my point. And if you're setting traps and pushing guys into position, even if you're on your back foot and you're fighting, look at me and Ruslan. That was a ring generalship masterclass. Move, stop, fire, move, stop, fire, spin, turn, you know, key steps to the line, hit him, move. I was on my back foot the entire time. I almost never went forward, which is why some judges, some people argue that I lost that fight, which is mind-blowing to me. When you tell me that I didn't win that fight, I go, oh, you don't know what boxing is.
That's just like the argument forever. That was 10 years ago, and they were talking about that 10 years before that. We're going to be talking about it 10 years from now. That's just the type of sport it is. It just is what it is. It's just a very subjective sport. With a lot of opinions and a lot of nuance and a lot of intricacies. And there are some people out there that are going to love the come forward style of Beterbiev. There are some people out there that are going to love what Bivol does in there. And the fact that Bivol can move, but also stand and trade and all that. It, to me, in this fight, I thought Bivol showed a little more. I thought he made adjustments a little more, whereas Beterbiev just fought how he always fights. And it was successful at some points, but it was, for the most part, it was not successful. Or Bivol, he changed things up a little bit. Like, he stood and traded. He also moved. He was elusive.
I was impressed with his willingness to trade shots early on. Like, there were some exchanges where they were both just missing that it was like, whoa. And that's the thing. Like, you mentioned the Canelo Triple G fight. And I didn't really think about that. And that was a really good observation, Dan. But in that fight, you had guys who were way more equal in terms of power and chin. This fight was not. So for Bivol to stand in the pocket with this guy who was such a murderous puncher, and Bivol's chin's not like Canelo.
I was going to say, maybe Bivol does have a good chin.
I'm sure he does, but we've seen him hurt. Like, we've never seen Canelo hurt. Like, Canelo's gotten hit by some of the biggest punchers in multiple weight classes. We've never seen him hurt. We've seen Bivol hurt. So he can get hurt. And Beterbiev hurts everyone. So it was I was impressed with his willingness to literally have punches whiz right by and trade and exchange shots. So that was like you said, that he made adjustments and made them effectively that, you know, showed that he went to homework. He went and did his homework for this fight.
Well, I'm also impressed with Beterbiev being 40 years old and looked like he could have fought like 5, 6, 10 more rounds.
I was actually thinking, man, this fight needs 15 rounds. Like, they were fighting at a very measured pace, both of them.
Yeah.
They were being very cautious.
But I think Beterbiev had more left at the end.
It seemed like that, but he was at least pushing, you know. Well, you don't know. That's the thing. I'm like, we need 15. I'm like, I thought Bivol was ahead, and I was like, but listen, I would love to see this go another couple of rounds to see if Beterbiev can keep up this pace that he started only two rounds ago, or, you know, will Bivol find a second, third wind and be on those toes the way he was. It's a similar argument to what I make with the female championship fights. Like, yeah. 10 twos is 10 rounds, two minutes each is just not enough time to separate, you know, the level of skill at a championship level fight. I think when we have guys that are this high level, even 12 threes is not enough time to separate, you know, how good these guys really are.
That's why there should be a rematch. And that's why I think in a rematch, as much as I thought Bivol won this fight, and I thought that Bivol looked pretty damn good, like a rematch, I think I would favor Beterbiev.
I think
that over the course of time, Bivol will get caught and Beterbiev will find him. And if the judges aren't going to reward Bivol for all of that work, then Beterbiev can continue to fight that fight, and eventually he will find him. I think in a rematch, which I think there will be, I would think that Beterbiev could find Bivol and potentially stop him.
The thing about Beterbiev is, and I said this last night, as long as the fight's going, he's got a chance to win. And the more rounds you spend with him, he'll find a way. And that's to your point, Dan. I think in the next fight. Also, you got to think about Bivol, who doesn't want the same decision. He's going to have to make more adjustments. He made adjustments for this fight, so he's going to have to make more adjustments, and there's more opportunity for him to do things that he's not used to doing and get caught. And if the guy hits you, he hurts you. There's no question about it.
That's a good point. That's going to say, like, what does Bivol, for a rematch that we believe is coming, Bivol is like, damn, I fought a pretty good fight, and I still lost. So what the heck am I going to do differently in this rematch so I could get the secure win? Because I'm probably not going to stop Beterbiev. So what do I have to do in there to get a more demonstrative win? Do I have to stand and trade more? If he stands and trades more, he's probably going to get stopped because Beterbiev's power is still really good. Bivol will tell you that.
He told you that. You can see
it. So it's a very, very tough situation for Bivol to come out on top in a rematch, because he should fight exactly how he fought.
That was gonna be my response.
And he didn't get rewarded for it. So if Bivol makes adjustments,
but now there's more eyes. There's more awareness to the fact that, especially with the pushback we're gonna get from the fans, from everyone saying, like, you know, how many people are saying that Bivol should have won that fight?
Even Turkey said it.
If I'm Bivol, I fight the exact same fight. The exact same fight. And yeah, hopefully this time he gets it, and then maybe we get a third fight. Which, listen, that's not the worst thing for either man. We were talking about last night. Like, you know, what's next? I mean, I think for Beterbiev, like, do you really want to fight these other young, big, hungry guys, or do you want to fight another fight at this pace? Because this was an older man's pace. This was not a crazy hectic fight by any means. Like I said, I don't think Bivol fought 3 minutes of any single round. So you want to fight a Benavidez who's going to be in your grill nonstop, and he's huge.
Benavidez will put a pace on Beterbiev.
Yes.
And he's got power, and he's got the punching
size,
ability.
Size, reach, everything.
Yeah, that would be not a great matchup for Beterbiev. That's the thing. It's like the light heavyweight division right now has a lot of names. Like Morel Jr. is now fighting David Benavidez, which was announced.
That's so cool.
We're going to have an episode later in the week about all the news that has happened over the last couple of days, because there's a lot of news. But they're now entrenched now at 175. Beterbiev, Benavidez and Morel. Beterbiev and Bivol should fight again. Morel and Benavidez fight in December or January. Then we can take a look at it from there. But I totally agree. Like, Beterbiev and Bivol have to go again, and potentially a third time, because I don't think any of them are Russian. They are Russian, both of them. Rushing. I don't think any of them are rushing.
See what I did there?
That happens with that quick slang. Rushing to fight a David Benavidez, or maybe a Morel for that case.
I think the winner of Benavidez and Morel should fight Buatsi, because there's going to be a lot of time between this rematch and when the dust settles between Beterbiev and Bivol. I think there's going to be a lot. There's going to be an opportunity for these guys to fight a couple times. I like Benavidez Morel winner fighting Buatsi. I think he's earned to be the contender, one of the top contender guys in the weight class that is there for the title shots. One, he's fantastic. Two, he's been around for a very long time and has been overlooked quite a bit. Luckily, he's gotten some good wins recently. But I like Buatsi's future. I think he's super talented.
Yeah, you're a big Buatsi guy. Turkey is a big rematch guy. I would put a rematch at like 80% right now. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, I'll give Turkey credit. He did an interview.
Sense. It makes sense for everybody. There's a lot of money involved.
These rematches, they're like a foregone conclusion in Saudi. I give Turkey credit. He did an interview afterwards with Charlie Parsons, and he said, "I thought Bivol won." He says both of these men are my brothers, but I thought Bivol won by two. He said, which I guess means like two rounds, which I agree with the Turkey man. And we talked about this in the last episode, how you know this fight had to have Turkey behind it, or had to have Saudi behind it for it to get made. It wasn't the worst atmosphere. It was a little bit. It was like medium. I would say I've seen some really bad atmospheres there. Fury Usyk
not
seemed
mid,
like the best
medium.
One.
Not mid, medium.
Like Chris likes his steak, medium well.
Medium. And what? Are you out of your mind? No. You out of your mind?
Chris likes it bleeding. He
you
likes
guys
it blue.
Listening? Are you listening? I like it black and blue.
There you go. Yeah. So I think there will be a rematch. When it will happen remains to be seen. Maybe February or March. Just an awesome fight. I hope fans can simmer down a little bit. I guess the first 48 hours is the emotional time period. I should make a chart.
I get emotional now. I'm getting bad at old age. I'm getting more. I mean, you've always been an emotional guy for these fights. I was for a while there, especially when I was fighting, I was really just like numb. Yeah. And then when I was kind of left the sport, especially the highest level, I really became numb. But now it's coming back, man. My nerves.
You're in the media, and you have your takes, and you want your takes to hold up. You have your pre-fight takes, and you want your pre-fight takes to hold up.
I'm not super married to my takes. I care about the sport, Dan. That's why my nerves actually bother me, because I want the sport to look good, and I want
that's the same with me.
I want to be able to continue what we're doing in the best sport in the world, and I want it to be under the spotlight of that, and rather not being something that people think of as a corrupt bullshit. I don't want to watch it anymore, and this is why
I
watch UFC. My nerves comes from that. I want a good fight, which is why I love Pro Box TV. Our fights are awesome, and it's just we haven't gotten to the point where we've had really any obnoxious decisions. Like, we just get good fights. So
same. I spent this week in Puerto Rico watching
just good fights.
A bunch of 5-0, 6-0, 10-0 fighters that are doing it because they want to one day get to the level of Beterbiev and Bivol, and that's so refreshing, because I would say 90% of my time in boxing is spent at the highest level talking about the fights, going to the biggest fights. And when I do these club shows and these prospect cards, you get reminded of the real boxing. You get reminded of why these guys get into it and what they're all trying to accomplish. It's really, really cool. But for this one, I feel like, give it a couple more days where everyone can kind of simmer down and they can find and realize that this was a really good fight. There will be a rematch. Props to Bivol for giving zero excuses. He refused to give an excuse. I don't know if that changes, because I've seen guys say that and then later in the week they're giving every excuse under the sun. But Bivol is not giving any excuses. Beterbiev afterwards said, "I didn't really fight that great." So both guys are being very, very humble here. Did you see Bivol's ex-wife?
I did not, no.
Well, you're not on Twitter, because every time I open up the damn app, she was doing it like a live. Obviously, they don't like each other, or she hates him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's his ex-wife. And she's been going hard at him, like comments like, "You're going to lose. I'm team Beterbiev." she's live for the fight, and she even looked surprised. She thought Bivol won. Like, you see the look on her face. Her first reaction was
Beterbiev looked surprised too. The two most surprised people in the room were Beterbiev and Bivol. They both were like, "Oh,
yeah." I thought Beterbiev's body language afterwards, and Eddie touched on that. It was really not great. It was not. Maybe that's because he thought he didn't fight. Like, he was unhappy with his performance.
I think also he was a lot more tired than he let on. I think he really was pushing himself in those last couple rounds. Well, so even in the 40. Interview, he seemed tired.
Well, yeah, he threw 200 punches in the final.
No, I'm not knocking him at all. I'm just saying, he had a hard push at the end. So,
yeah, but Bivol's ex-wife was live, and she was dancing on his grave, and
dancing on his grave.
It was just so stupid. Like, everyone posting that, it's like, all right, guys, this is like why boxing is sometimes is looked at as a joke, because like who cares? But that's just boxing. That's Twitter, boxing Twitter. Some of these are like Canelo was being talked about in this in terms of potentially facing Bivol at 175. Many thought that Bivol won. The Bivol that you saw in the ring with Beterbiev and what we've seen lately of Canelo, can Canelo win the rematch with Bivol at 175?
No, doesn't change my mind at all. I don't think he beats Bivol. Bivol stands his ground more. He's gonna land more. Because if he was able to stay in the pocket with Beterbiev underneath his power, Canelo's obviously a lot faster than Beterbiev, but nothing in the first fight showed me that Canelo can hurt Bivol. The way he was able to pick shots off, and Bivol's actually very good at that. He's very adept at like almost like karate blocking shots with his forearms and catching and glancing, even when he does get caught. And he did that really well against Canelo. I don't know. This version of Bivol, I don't think this version of Bivol is anything different. I think he just chose to fight this way because of what he had in front of him. If he fights Canelo again, he can go back to the pendulum, but in and out jabbing, which has been very effective, especially against Canelo. Canelo's problem with guys who have feet.
In the lead up to this Beterbiev Bivol fight, Canelo mentioned I would fight Bivol if he won. He specifically didn't mention Beterbiev's name. Beterbiev comes out.
I'm not fighting that beast.
So Canelo versus Beterbiev at 175. How does that look?
I honestly give Canelo a better shot against Beterbiev.
Really?
Because of the pace. Beterbiev fights at a pretty slow clip these days. The fight that we saw last night. He doesn't throw a ton of punches. He's not that active. He used to set a pace on guys. He used to like put so much pressure. He started slow, but then he would like really rev up. But at a slower pace, Canelo's really good at that. And his defense is good enough, and his counterpunching, he'll get your respect. He does have a good jab, Canelo. He's a very underrated jab, I think. So I give him a better shot. I still don't think he beats him. I think Beterbiev beats Canelo too.
So it's a puzzle piece, boxing right now in terms of the top fights.
Stay in your weight class, Canelo. You don't need to go fight. You need to go to 75.
Like, there's no one at 68 anymore, man. That's what I'm talking about. This puzzle piece that we need a lot of things to fall into place. Like, it goes from 154 all the way up to 175. 154, you have Crawford waiting to see what's going on there. You have Fundora potentially fighting Errol Spence now because Crawford wants to fight Canelo. You have Canelo at 168 doing Canelo things, fighting the Berlangas of the world.
Canelo things, that's great.
Yeah, fighting in Berlanga, fighting Munguia, and not really taking those shots. At 175, you have now Beterbiev. You have Bivol, you have Benavidez, and you have Morel. Obviously, Benavidez wants to fight Canelo. We had to wait to see how all this played out. Is Canelo going to fight at 168? Is he going to go up to 175? Is he going to go to and fight Crawford at 168? These things are all intertwined. It's annoying because if there's weight classes for a reason and we can all just stay in our lane and our weight classes and fight each other, but that's just, there's money to be made. So I'm interested to see how it all plays out. I think Crawford, it's looking more and more likely that Canelo's going to fight Crawford.
You read my mind, Dan. I was going to interject with that. I'm like, for the first time, I actually think that this Crawford Canelo fight is starting to look plausible.
It's just like the chips are starting to fall. The clouds are starting to separate, and it's a process of elimination for Canelo. Like, he's literally said, there's no one left at 168. He could fight Mabili in May, or he could fight.
That's probably going to happen.
And that's always been your stance.
Yeah, I think that fight's it's going to happen, especially the way that Canelo's been moving lately. But I think Mamili hurt his shoulder in that fight with Derevchenko. So it depends on, you know, how long that recovery is going to be.
Fight him with one shoulder.
But again, guys will, they will fight Canelo with half their leg missing because it's money. It doesn't matter, you know.
Like when you fought Pacquiao, you weren't 100%.
Yeah, my face was still broken from the fight before, but I had no choice.
Broken face.
Missed the opportunity, so gotta do it.
One thing we know for sure is we're gonna find out. We're gonna find out. And you're gonna tune into this show because I stay on top of all this stuff. And we'll figure out who's fighting who at 154. Who's fighting who at 168? Forget about 160. We don't give a shit about 160. And who's fighting everyone? Who's fighting at 175? It seems like 175 is an actual weight class, and we're actually seeing top four going at it. Bivol, Beterbiev, Morel, Benavidez. So kudos to them. That division is probably my favorite right now, along with 154.
I think it's the highest level is 75. I think 54 is my favorite.
But 54 has the best spread out.
Yeah, and there's a lot of young guys.
And featherweight, spread out, nice.
Yeah, I would say featherweight I really like too, but I think they're probably the lowest level in terms of like absolute skill and even profile. And then 54 and then 75. 75, we just saw two gods in this sport.
Well, 74, they have two top 10 pound-for-pound guys.
Yeah,
and they have Benavidez and Morel right below them. The top four cannot be argued with. The top four supersedes the top 10 of the other divisions.
Yeah, true. Featherweight's badass. They're fun. Through 10 is tough. Like you got Josh Warrington in there, and wow. You got Josh Warrington in the basically at number 10, and you're like, wow, that's a good weight class.
The undercard was interesting, to say the least. It started off on a very bad note because DAZN all week told customers that the undercard would be free or with your subscription after Shakur Stevenson and the Cordina fight fell out. And the last second, in the 11th hour, they decided to charge $20 as a pay-per-view, which left fans pretty upset, and I don't blame them. I don't really love that move. So if you watch the fight, you had to order it, the undercard. And the undercard saw, I would say the biggest moment was Fabio Wardley denting the head of Frazier Clark in the first round. Wow. This guy, Fabio, we got to talk about this guy. This guy's up there. He could be next in heavyweight.
Guys, that was a rematch from a draw, killer fight, back and forth, awesome, awesome brawl. And then for Wardley to go out there and just do this man dirty in the first round like that was very impressive.
Scary, because Clark, you can see the dent in his head, his face drooped, and just reminded every once in a while, they're wearing gloves.
Oh, yeah, this is brain damage, guys. Yeah, knockouts are brain damage. Yeah.
We're wearing gloves, and you think there's some form of protection, but damn, there's every so often you're reminded that this is
guys,
a very
gloves.
Dangerous
sport. Are more for hands than brains. It doesn't really help your brain. Helps your hands. That's
you should make a T-shirt that says that,
so you can hit harder. That's what when you talk to bare knuckle guys. Like, oh, yeah, this is way safer than boxing because you don't get the concussive force because you can't punch as hard because your hands break almost every fight. Those guys destroy their hands, their thumbs, their knuckles, their fingers, their metacarpal.
Yeah, bare knuckle was in action this weekend in Spain. McGregor's now involved with it.
Spain.
And they had this kid in the media, Ben Davis, who I know. He's a media member, and he fought another media member, Oscar Willis, who
in
runs.
Bare knuckle?
Dude. Ben Davis, this guy's awesome. He's I've called fights with him. He's young, hungry, media guy, and mostly in MMA. And he's done a bunch of fights. He's done karate combat. He's done some. He fought Anderson Silva's son. He fought Anderson Silva's son in Misfits.
I love that
karate combat. And then he did this past weekend. He did bare knuckle, and he went up against this guy Oscar Willis, who runs McGregor's website or something. And it was pretty hyped up. McGregor was in the middle of them at the press conference. McGregor was in the ring with them afterwards, picking up both their hands. It had to be an out of body experience for my guy, Ben Davis. He ultimately lost and Willis won. He's just bigger, but it just looked so awesome to see a guy he's an average Joe, taking that walk. And bare knuckle is crazy. And McGregor was front and center this weekend, acting like a psycho. As a promoter,
so fans, get in the comments. You guys want to see Dan
stop? I know you're
get into it. I mean, you were saying how awesome it is that you see this regular Joe getting in there. I mean, what listeners, what do we think? Do we want Dan to lace him up in one combat sport or another?
If I was like 5 years younger, I would. And if you lived closer, people ask me all the time, like, would you ever do it? Because, you know, there's the creator clash, there's Misfit. There's like now a lane for it. And I said, maybe if I was a little bit younger, maybe if I wasn't so good looking, and maybe if Chris Algieri lived closer and he can actually train me for the content.
I would like, train you. Yeah, I would train you. I wouldn't want you to do any of those like Misfit fights. I want you to do like a New York Golden Gloves fight.
Like a smoker?
Like,
I
do like one of the white collar ones first, and then like maybe do like a real fight where you fight like a guy who's looking to, you know, to be in the gloves, or maybe even you do the gloves or something like that. I would be okay with that.
Maybe I should do it. Maybe I should.
I mean, a white collar fight is not. I wouldn't put that out of the question, even at your age now.
Like, you wear headgear?
Yeah. Yeah, it's headgear. It's big gloves. You
fight at my age, like I'm an old man. Like I'm
to start fighting. Yeah, you are an old man. you're a very old man.
Well, didn't Sergio Martinez start when he was
when he was like 24?
And he's a freak. He was like a world class cyclist at the time.
Yeah, yeah. He came from another sport. I mean, I started when I was 24, 25. My first boxing match, I think I was 25.
That's crazy. I don't know. I'll think about
it. And I was old for it. But I was also, you know, a world champion in another combat sport, and I was still old for it.
Yeah. I'll stick to blitzball. What else we got here? Slapdick ball.
I'm gonna keep our term to ourselves. It's a little little aggressive for radio.
It might give us an R rating on our thing. Chris Eubank wins a ho-hum fight over Zermeta. Conor Benn gets in the ring. These guys jawing at each other for the billionth time. Either make the fight or just move on.
I think the fight's happening now. It looked like this was what this was for. And if I have a theory now. So why hasn't Benn been fighting? He fought last February and now, but all of a sudden everyone's talking about this fight. Like he's available to fight right now. There's been no announcement or whatever. It's because he didn't look good his last two fights.
Right.
They're sitting him out so we can get to this fight. Because if he loses to the Peter Dobsons of the world in his next fight, this ticket goes out the window.
It really should have been out the window with the positive drug test, and now they're just doing the old wait it out.
You know how they push things through, and then they make these WWE, you know, in the ring jimmer drawing at each other. It gets all the British fans excited, and then that fight's going to happen, and they're both going to get paid.
It's going to happen in Saudi, if it should happen in the UK, because it's a UK fight, but it's just they're not allowing Ben to fight there.
Also, they're probably not going to drug test them there. They can both, you know, juice to the gills if they want.
Well, Eubank should not be fighting at 160. There was a video of him like the night before the fight or the night before the weigh-in just killing himself to get to 160.
I was saying during the fight, he's so dynamic offensively. He came out right away, drops Zermeta with a beautiful right hand behind the ear. And he's just like, he looks like flashes of Roy Jones, but then he also looks so fragile. There are times.
I think it's the weight.
I think so too. Because I think, listen, the guy fought world-class guys at 68. You know, he's not a small guy. He steps in there. He's like so shredded. His skin looks like paper thin across his abs. But like, there were times where Zermeta was able to, like, he pushed him to the ground a bunch of times. He just didn't have the physical strength to, you know, to withstand any kind of resistance. He got hit with a couple shots that definitely bothered him. And Zermeta, I called his fight against Triple G. Mugia abused him. He's a ho-hum guy. You said it was a ho-hum fight. Zermeta's no offense. He's not at this level.
Yeah.
And still, even he made Eubank look vulnerable.
I don't understand why he's trying to make 160. Why just fight at 168? Canelo's there.
Especially if you're looking for the Canelo fight.
Like, what are we doing here?
It's because he wants this Ben fight. I think he thinks
he acts like he doesn't want it, but he said afterwards, like, oh, I guess my next fight's lined up. Like, it was news to him.
He's very smart. He's marketing. He understands. He's looking for big paydays. He doesn't care about winning world titles. The guy's never been a true world champion. Like, he obviously doesn't care about that. He's looking for big money fights, big profile fights. Ben's a big profile fight over there, but you know the Canelo fight's really the one he wants.
Yeah. Ben Whitaker, rough day at the office.
Woof.
He finds himself in a firefight with Liam Cameron. Many had him down before they both went WWE Royal Rumble style, flipped over the top ropes, and he couldn't continue.
My boy wanted out of that fight. He was going to
Ben Quitter. Quitaker.
Man, the internet's so fast. So fast. Undefeated.
Yeah, I was following that one on the plane, on the flight home. And you're giving me updates. I'm seeing highlights. I see the WWE Royal Rumble thing. And then I see everyone saying they had him losing. I see everyone say he was looking for a way out. And then it was Ben Quitaker. And
I don't know if we were talking about it on air, but I was like, there's no way this guy fights the way that he's been fighting against anyone who's quality, because he's doing it against guys with 14 losses. Like, when you're tapping your heels and jumping around and acting like, you know, whatever, and you're making highlight reels situations. But you look at the guys you're fighting, you're like, come on. But I have people, like, complete casuals who don't watch your sport, sending me Ben Whitaker back. This guy's incredible. He's like the Matrix. I'm like, he's fighting guys with losing records. Once he steps up, he's not doing that anymore.
That was my biggest problem. And I tweeted that video of him doing the dancing, the Bugs Bunny stuff against that journeyman. And I was like, something about this just rubs me the wrong way. And I got so much pushback from these fans, like, call me old guard, call me, like, you don't like fun, you must hate bat flips and baseball. No, like, in baseball, like, if you do a bat flip off of a pitcher that's one of the best pitchers in baseball, you deserve to do the bat flip. And if you're a pitcher, you strike out the best hitter in baseball, you deserve to storm off the mound and pump your fist. If you're beating up on an incompetent fighter and you're looking like and you're showboating for your personal gain, you're a clown, in my opinion. So when he flips over the ropes and there's these accusations of him quitting and these accusations of him not looking good, and we'll see with your own eyes, you're going to get people on your case. Like, you put the target on your back and now you have to deal with it. He gets the draw, technical draw, and, you know, he's just overhyped. 27 years old, which I didn't know. I thought he was younger. It's just a case of UK fighter where they're desperately looking for the next star, and they wanted to be this Ben Whitaker guy so badly. But Chris, we know this. If you don't have the goods, you don't have the goods.
Yeah. And listen, it doesn't get easier as you step up in class, guys. It gets a lot harder, and it gets a steep incline. Although I do believe this is a way too steep of an incline. If you look at the guy that he fought, super solid, never been stopped. Has been in with world title level guys. So way, way too big of a step. This guy's got less than 10 fights and hasn't fought anyone for real. So I don't know what they expected to happen here, but
that was Ben Shalom from Boxer, his promoter, which I give him credit for, you know, doing that. But also, like,
there's a way you step guys up. That was a huge step. And it went the way we don't step up guys like that. Like, that he's probably four or five fights away from fighting that guy, honestly.
Yeah. Jay Opatai, complete mismatch.
Man, he's good, though.
He's really good.
I really like him.
I think he's got options.
So sharp.
Like, imagine Beterbiev just like, I'm dumb at 175. I'm going to cruiserweight to fight Opatai. Just one rock'em sock'em robot type of fight.
If that were the case, Beterbiev would get the biggest balls in the world award for me for this year. Like,
he won't do that, because I don't think just really out of it. I think Opatai will wait now and fight the winner of CBS and Gilberto Ramirez. I like that fight too.
I love that. I really like Gilberto Zerto at cruiserweight. I think he's really good. Way better than 75.
And Scott Nicholson won once again, pretty much a shutout. For the first women's title fight in Saudi Arabia. Hopefully there's many more after that. So it was a interesting undercard. It had a lot of names, had a lot of weird moments. It had a lot of shocking moments with the dent, the flipping over the ring. The I don't know if it was worth $20 for fans out there. That's up for you to decide, but that was the full
card. Dan, it's better than 80, bro. It's better than 90. It's better than 100.
$20 to watch the undercard. Then you have to turn it off and turn on ESPN Plus. And then watched 15 minutes of Phil on ESPN Plus at them at the desk just to get to the 6 o'clock, 6:15 ring walk Eastern of a fight that some people are claiming robbery. I just had it all yesterday. Yesterday was a full.
The good, the bad, the ugly, everything.
It had everything.
It's boxing, baby.
Boxing. It had literally everything yesterday. I was entertained, highly entertained on the plane, highly entertained watching it, highly entertained following the post stuff on Twitter. And all the content out there. Hope everyone enjoyed this show. We'll be back later in the week, because this is a flurry of news. I was writing it all down as it was all coming out, like a lot of fights being announced, fights falling out. So our next episode, we'll get into some of that, like this Fundora Spence rumors. There's Charlo potentially coming back. Stephen Fulton might be fighting Figueroa. Lomachenko is considering retirement. Teofimo Lopez is in a dispute with Top Rank. So we'll get deeper into those topics on the next episode. All right, Chris?
Right. I mean,
right.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Right. This episode's over, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. We will see a rematch. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.
Peace.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.